On the phone with me from his home in Virginia is Joe Urschel. He's the author of the new book, The Year of Fear, Machine Gun Kelly and the Manhunt That Changed the Nation. It talks about a kidnapping, a manhunt, and the birth of the FBI. Joe Urschel, welcome to the book club at 91.7.
Thanks, Mark.
I was amused to read your author's note at the beginning that this all began when you visited the Library of Congress and found out that someone with the same last name as you was involved in some gangsters back in the 1930s. Share that story.
Yeah, yes, indeed. I got to Washington in the early 80s, 1982, and went to visit the Library of Congress because it's a great tourist site and it's reputed to be the world's greatest collection of knowledge. So, of course, you have to go.
Yes.
And they, they had just converted their card cataloging system, you remember those from way back when, over to a digital database. So you no longer had to go through paper to find what you were looking for. You could just punch it right into the terminal and see what they had. So kind of on a lark, I went over to the keyboard and just punched in my last name. And one entry came up, and it was Charles Urschel, kidnap victim. And there was one book in the entire library system about it. And that was a book written in 1934 by one of the people who was involved in the kidnapping. So I called up the book and sat down and read it cover to cover in one sitting because it was just such a transfixing tale. It was just written like a Dashiell Hammett novel or something. It was just this, you know, these gangsters and FBI agents and car chases and all kinds of really good stuff with interesting twists and turns, and it just kind of got my interest piqued in that whole crime and that whole era, and I just began collecting research on it. And when I finally got the chance a couple of years ago, sat down and wrote it.
Now, you did find out that Charles Urschel, the name you found, and the kidnap victim, was not actually related to you, or maybe related, but way back in the old country, right?
Yeah, and that just baffled me because I thought I knew all the Urschels in America and I was related to them all, but it turns out no. At first after I saw this, I called up my dad and I said, "Are we related to this guy?" And he said, "No, we're not." And I said, "Are you sure?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm sure."
He's an oil baron. Are you sure, Dad?
Yeah, right. So, you know, like any good son, I set out on a quest to prove my dad wrong and did all this genealogical research and looked into it. And yes, no, indeed, there is no connection, at least not in the United States and not dating back several centuries into the German Republic. So eventually, I'm sure we're related, but we're not closely related.
Very interesting that the Urschel kidnapping, which happened in 1933, led to the birth of the FBI. J. Edgar Hoover was in place, but it was not the FBI at the time. As a matter of fact, it was not really a real law enforcement organization. And I loved in reading The Year of Fear, learning about how, when we think about the gangsters, we thought they ran for a long time, but really you indicate in the book that that gangster era was not that long-lived.
No, the Western gangster pretty much disappeared at the end of 1934, early 1935. But in 1933, they basically had a free rein on the Western states along a criminal corridor that stretched from Dallas, Texas to St. Paul, Minnesota. And these Western gangsters, or Midwestern, I suppose, were unlike sort of the organized criminals in New York and Chicago. These guys they were freelancers. You know, they'd form up their own gangs and break them up and hire friends for different bank jobs and whatnot. And they were pretty much protected by a lot of the police agencies out in those areas. And you know, they were robbing banks with virtual impunity. I mean, even a lot of the local populace supported them because at the time in 1933, which is the worst year of the Great Depression, The banks are foreclosing on a lot of farmers and a lot of homeowners, so they're very unpopular. So when their bank gets knocked over by one of these colorful criminals like Machine Gun Kelly, you know, they're not all that upset about it because, you know, they feel like the bank stole their money already.
Right. I'm speaking with Joe Urschel about his book, The Year of Fear, Machine Gun Kelly and the Manhunt That Changed the Nation. You can learn more at our website, wvxu.org. The book centers on the kidnapping of Charles Urschel, who was an oil tycoon in Oklahoma, who, when the banks began to run out of money from all these bank robberies, Joe, everybody turned to kidnapping. That was the new gangster thing to do. And that's the central story of the kidnapping of Charles Urschel in this book. But this was something that had been happening beginning with, I guess, the Lindbergh baby, right?
Well, actually, it had started a little bit before then with the Depression, you know, brought kind of termination to a lot of banks. And guys like Machine Gun Kelly, they made their living by running liquor and robbing banks primarily. And in 1933, the Prohibition era was coming to an end, and so that business was drying up. And the banks that they were robbing had less and less money, making each job less and less lucrative. And so they kind of collectively started turning to this kidnapping for profit scheme. And from 1930 to 1933, it was estimated that there were 2,000 successful kidnappings in the United States for ransom and profit, and 600 in Illinois alone. So this was becoming kind of a scourge. You know, you had people like Bing Crosby driving around in armor-plated cars with protection sitting in the front seat and armed bodyguards. And, you know, there was kind of an apprehension and terror around the moneyed class, you know, the few people in the country that still had money, because they knew that guys like Kelly would be coming after them.
It was fun, as I read the Year of Fear, in seeing how much life has changed just in what seems like a short length of time, because things were quite lawless. So we think of the FBI today as being so on the spot and, such magnificent examples of law enforcement. But back in the 1930s, the Department of Justice was actually laughed at. J. Edgar Hoover, while there, was looking for some success because there had been so many, failures, I suppose you should say.
Right, and they were held first of all, they didn't carry weapons, and they didn't have the power to make an arrest. So when they would show up at a locality, the local police, who oftentimes were in the pocket of the local mob, wouldn't cooperate with them and would just sort of brush them aside and make fun of them. But after FDR's election, he put a real premium on trying to create a national police force. In 1933, keep in mind, there was very little law enforcement. There were only 11 states that even had a state police force. So you're basically relying on small city police forces and county sheriffs. And their jurisdictions ended at the end of their city line or their county line or in those 11 states of the state line. So if you're going to pull a kidnapping job, it was pretty easy to pluck someone out of Oklahoma City in this case, jump across the Texas border and hide them out on a farm in Dallas, Texas. And it was highly unlikely that anybody would ever find you.
Well, and even speaking to law enforcement, though, as you indicate many times in the book, that sometimes law enforcement was just as corrupt as those gangsters.
Exactly. there was one of the famous cases. There was a St. Paul police detective who ran a kidnapping unit, and he was supposed to solve all of the kidnappings that happened in and around his town. But in fact, he was supplying information and protection to the kidnappers who were working out of St. Paul.
It's just amazing, the changes that have come around, but to hear some of this. Life was quite different back there, but then again, they were faced with the Depression and all these challenges that merely finding a square meal, it was difficult back in the time.
Exactly. I mean, you had, you know, everybody being displaced from the Midwestern farms. You had the beginning of the Dust Bowl kicking up. You had homeless migrants who were, you know, the so-called Okies, who were just picking up everything they had and trying to get to California where there might be work. And in fact, along the way, when Kelly and his wife Catherine are on the lam trying to elude capture, they end up picking up a homeless family and using them as cover.
Well, let's talk for a moment about Machine Gun Kelly, because I love how you point out that, well, number one, his wife had high ambitions for him, and number two, his wife spread a lot of stories about him that weren't necessarily true, so maybe these gangster tales we hear aren't really as, well, not as shiny as you think they are.
Well, yeah, the great thing about Kelly, or the most interesting thing about him, is that he's not at all like the kind of gangsters, the John Dillingers that we think of, and the Pretty Boy Floyds. He was not up from poverty. He in fact grew up middle class in Memphis, Tennessee. He was a caddy at the local country club. He even went to college for a semester, highly unusual at that time. And he wasn't particularly violent. I mean, he was a student of Harvey Bailey, who was considered the greatest bank robber in the history of the United States, basically the guy who invented the modern form of kidnapping. But one of his tenets was you don't want to attract a lot of attention. So you don't want a lot of violence. You don't want any shooting if you can avoid it. You want to slip in and slip out as quick as you can and get away safely. So Kelly, in fact, operated under that system, and he preferred robbing a bank with just maybe one or two partners, and he'd carry in a concealed 38, and he was one of these great sort of hail fellow well-met types, you know, and he'd just go in and charm the bank tellers into giving them all the money in the drawers and to not calling the police after he left. But Catherine Kelly was really, she really wanted the more glamorous life, and she wanted to be a celebrity in her own right. So she was always pushing Kelly to do bigger and bigger jobs. She, in fact, is the one who kind of pushed him into the kidnapping racket. And she bought him this machine gun because all the other gangsters were using them at the time. And then she spread stories around all the speakeasies and places that she would frequent that, saying things like he can shoot, he's been practicing with this machine gun, and he can shoot walnuts off a fence post, and he can write his name on the side of a barn with it. And sooner or later, all of these stories that she was spreading end up being picked up by, you know, local law enforcement, who start building a profile of this guy who they suspect of being a bank robber. And they describe him as a murderous expert machine gunner. And so when Hoover and his men start looking for him, you know, they're thinking they're going to run up against an armed gang that's highly lethal.
And such was not the case.
Right.
Lethal, maybe, you know. Well, but I also loved one line that made me chuckle out loud, Joe, when I was reading The Year of Fear, where you talk about those stories Catherine was spreading about Kelly. And about how, you know, when she would stop by a speakeasy, and she went by many speakeasies. So,
yeah, right.
I love that
line. She was really the kind of classic gangster moll. She was up from poverty. She was on, Kelly was her fourth husband. She's thought to have murdered her third husband. Apparently she caught him cheating and ended up in an argument with him, and he ends up dead on the floor with a bullet through his head, and she types out a suicide note and lays it next to him, and that's the end of that.
Wow. Well, I loved all the stories in your book, and appreciate you taking a little time to talk with me this morning, Joe.
Well, thanks for having me on. I enjoy talking about it.
Joe Urschel, his book is The Year of Fear, Machine Gun Kelly and the Manhunt That Changed the Nation. It is a marvelous story that touches on the birth of the FBI, what life was like at the end of the Depression and end of Prohibition, and what those gangsters, that life they really lived. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.